Why did factory workers in Pennsylvania vote for a billionaire who promised to restore their pride? Why did rural French voters embrace Marine Le Pen's nationalism over economic reform? The answer isn't in their wallets, it's in their souls. Across the globe, from Brexit to Bolsonaro, we're witnessing a seismic shift that economists missed entirely. While they obsessed over GDP and unemployment rates, something deeper was stirring. The ancient human craving for recognition, for dignity, for being seen. This isn't new. What's new is how thoroughly we forgot it mattered. Modern economics rests on a flattering fiction. We're all rational calculators, maximizing utility like biological spreadsheets. This explains why Chinese farmers worked harder when they could keep their harvest. But it utterly fails to explain why a firefighter runs into a burning building, why a protester faces down tanks, or why someone straps on a suicide vest. When economists stretch utility to cover both greed and self-sacrifice, the concept becomes meaningless. People pursue whatever they pursue. Plato saw deeper. In The Republic, he identified three parts of the soul: desire, our appetites, reason, our calculator, and thymos, the part that demands respect and judges worth. Thymos is why the gay marriage movement wasn't really about tax benefits or hospital visitation rights, which civil unions could provide. It was about equal dignity, about society saying, your love counts as much as anyone else's. The Me Too movement wasn't primarily an economic complaint. It was a roar of anger about being treated as objects rather than persons. This drive for recognition splits two ways. Megalithemia is the desire to be recognized as superior, the warrior's craving, the billionaire's yacht race, the celebrity's hunger for adoration. Isothemia is the demand to be seen as equally worthy, the foundation of every civil rights movement. Modern democracy represents isothemia's triumph, expanding recognition from aristocratic warriors to everyone. Yet this creates perpetual tension. The quest for equal recognition can morph into demands for superiority, while truly equal recognition struggles to acknowledge genuine excellence. Adam Smith understood this in the Theory of Moral Sentiments. The rich glory in wealth not for comfort, but because it draws attention. The poor are ashamed because poverty places them out of sight of mankind. This explains why universal basic income won't solve automation's disruption. Having a job provides recognition of social value, proof that you matter. Consider a female lawyer passed over for partner despite equal work. Her anger isn't about money, it's about injustice. Even paid double but denied the title, she'd feel equally aggrieved. Salary is a marker of dignity. Unlike thymos, which pulses through all human hearts across history, modern identity is a recent invention. It rests on a peculiar idea. You have an authentic inner self, fundamentally separate from your outer social role. This inner self is the real you, and society's expectations are masks you wear. This division produces the quintessentially modern question: who am I, really? Martin Luther accidentally invented this concept during his spiritual crisis, concluding that salvation comes through faith alone, not church rituals. This placed the individual's inner relationship with God above all external authority. Jean-Jacques Rousseau secularized Luther's insight, arguing that humans are born naturally good but corrupted by civilization. If society corrupts and the inner self is pure, then liberation means stripping away social constraints and discovering your true nature. This idea now saturates our world. We tell teenagers to find themselves. We celebrate living your truth. The tension between inner authenticity and outer expectation has become the defining struggle of modern life, shaping everything from therapy sessions to political movements demanding recognition for marginalized identities. Human dignity's philosophical evolution shaped modern politics. Christianity established moral worth through our capacity to choose between right and wrong. Kant secularized this, linking dignity to rational self-determination. Hegel went further. Consciousness develops through interaction, making recognition fundamental to existence. History, he argued, is driven by struggles for recognition resolvable only through mutual acknowledgement of shared dignity. The French Revolution crystallized this into liberté, égalité, fraternité. Liberal democracy institutionalizes recognition through constitutional rights and rule of law, not merely a system for choosing leaders, but a moral project declaring every citizen possesses equal dignity, deserving protection and voice. Freedom encompasses both negative liberty, protection from arbitrary power, and positive agency, capacity for self-governance. This explains why revolutions erupt over dignity rather than poverty. When Tunisian police humiliated Mohamed Bouazizi, he sparked the Arab Spring, not because of unemployment, but because he'd been treated like nothing. Ukraine's revolution of dignity wasn't primarily about democracy. It was about refusing exploitation by contemptuous kleptocrats. These movements reveal democracy's deepest promise, respect. By the 19th century, the politics of recognition fractured into two incompatible visions: universal individual rights, recognizing equal human dignity, or collective identity through nationalism and politicized religion, demanding recognition for particular groups. This tension persists in every revolution and protest movement today. Both nationalism and political Islam emerge when modernization shatters traditional communities. For young Muslims in European cities, many find belonging not in their adopted countries, but in religious identity, an ummah, a global community of believers. This explains cultural shifts like young Muslim women adopting the hijab, often signaling cultural pride rather than religious piety. Olivier Roy notes that many recent terrorists share eerie similarities. Second-generation European Muslims who rejected their parents' Islam, appeared westernized, fell into marginalization and crime, then experienced sudden religious rebirth through radical influences. Roy calls this the Islamicization of radicalism. These young men draw from the same well of alienation that fed earlier extremists, whether nationalist fanatics or communist revolutionaries. Both nationalism and Islamism function as identity politics for the dislocated. Both peddle victimhood, blame outsiders, and demand recognition, not for all humans, but for members of particular nations or faiths. This restrictive vision threatens liberal democracy's universalist promise, replacing "all humans deserve respect" with "our group deserves respect, and others are enemies." Despite rising inequality and stagnant working-class wages, the old class-based left collapsed globally. Instead, populist, nationalist leaders surged: Putin, Erdogan, Orban, and Trump. The elephant graph of globalization shows workers in developed countries stalled, while the global poor and super-rich prospered. Yet instead of socialist revival, we got nationalist backlash. Why? As one scholar put it, the revolutionary message was addressed to classes, but by some terrible postal error, it was delivered to nations. Economic grievances intertwine with identity wounds. To be poor isn't just material deprivation, it's invisibility. Ralph Ellison captured this in Invisible Man. The deepest injury wasn't mistreatment, but being unseen, not registering as a full human in others' eyes. When the U.S. Constitution was ratified, only property-owning white males enjoyed full political rights. The circle has since expanded dramatically. This democratization of dignity represents liberal democracy's greatest achievement, yet it produced unexpected tensions. Rousseau's vision of the authentic inner self merged with therapeutic culture, producing the assumption that our inner selves contain limitless potential, requiring liberation from social constraints. Mental health professionals quadrupled between 1970 and 1995. Even religion emphasized personal fulfillment over sacrifice. Classical liberalism tasked government with protecting rights and providing services. The therapeutic model made it responsible for citizens' self-esteem. When Stanford students protested the Western culture curriculum in 1987, they demanded inclusion of non-white and female authors primarily to raise marginalized cultures' dignity. The therapeutic model had birthed modern identity politics. This creates genuine dilemmas. Recognition of previously invisible groups is morally necessary. Gay couples deserve equal dignity, women deserve respect, racial minorities deserve representation. Yet proliferating identity categories threatens collective action. When we fragment into smaller groups nursing separate grievances, we lose capacity for solidarity. Identity issues resist compromise more than economic disputes. Either you recognize me or you don't. We cannot escape identity politics. It flows from universal human psychology and our demand for dignity. Yet we can choose which identities to cultivate. We possess multiple identities: race, gender, profession, nationality, affinities. While identity politics tends to divide, we can deliberately create broader, more integrative identities without erasing individual experiences. This requires addressing specific injustices, police violence, sexual harassment, discrimination, while integrating smaller groups through shared civic identity. National identities built around liberal democratic principles rather than ethnicity offer one path forward. America has succeeded at immigrant integration through creedal identity. You become American by embracing beliefs, not ancestry. European nations could shift from citizenship by blood to birthplace, imposing stringent naturalization requirements, including language proficiency and civic knowledge. Universal national service could unite young people from different backgrounds toward common goals. Our world lurches toward opposing dystopias, hyper-centralized surveillance states, and endless fragmentation into failed states and self-contained communities. Yet we can still envision societies embracing diversity while pursuing common ends. Identity can divide, but it can also integrate, and that integration offers the only sustainable path through our current crisis.